Got a couple fun things to show you today. Hope everybody's doing okay. So some announcements as we get started. Some people have been, either through other classes or on their own initiative, have registered their clickers at iClicker.com. They have your information, but they won't give it to me unless I use their grading program, which I wasn't planning to use. So I don't see any way that I can coax it out of them. They won't email it to me, and the program, I actually ran the program, the grading program, just to see if I could, you know, on the sly, download everything, and it's not my friend. So what I'm going to have you do is, when the first homework goes out, which it has not yet, I've been getting emails from people saying, but I didn't get the homework. There isn't the homework yet, but it's going to come out probably this weekend. I will announce it over the email list. Have people been getting email from the Sakai list? Okay, all right, good. If you haven't been getting email because you haven't been checking it, okay. But if you have been checking and you haven't been getting it, let me know. It's possible that it's being spam filtered or something's not set up right. So that is the main way I'd like to communicate with you. And as soon as the homework assignment is ready to go out, I will announce it there and let you know when it's due and how to enter information and so forth. And one of the things I'll have you do on the homework is to type in your iClicker number, which I did get at least one question saying, what is that? And I'm not sure that I can tell you, but on my clicker, there's a little 8-digit number at the bottom, and those digits can include A, B, C, D, E, and F, because it's actually a hexadecimal number. That's what you'll need to type in, and I'll be able to snarf those up from your homework and use that to link all the clicking that you've done so far and all the clicking you'll do in the future in this class to your name. So don't worry, if it's not registered yet, it's not like you're not getting credit for things that have happened. I still have it. I still have the information. I just don't know that it's yours yet. But it'll all work out. And I guess that's it. Happy New Year to those who are celebrating one. And I guess if you have any questions, announcements, thoughts at this point, ready for me to get started. So if you do, like, this, say you're walking around in your regular lives, and some computer science-y thing comes up that you wish you knew a little bit more about, you can feel free to bring that to class and just ask me, and I'll answer the question as best I can. It's a standing offer, but probably no one will take me up on it. But it would be really fun to get to just talk to you about what's going on in the world in computer science. But I'll wait for you to answer. All right, so I want to ask a couple quicker questions, and then we'll dive into where we left off last time. So, the question is as follows. This is I asked a couple of these last time. So now you have another chance at mastering it. So here the situation is that I told my daughter Molly what we were doing last time, and that some weird Sabrina the Teenage Witch thing came up. So I thought that was kind of fun. So I said, here, go out, find a barcode for something that will be really embarrassing for me to announce in class, and then tell me the barcode except for one digit. Oh, it doesn't look well formatted, does it? Hang on a second. Don't start that yet. She wrote 97805. Oh, here it is. 97805 ? 056861. So I put an extra zero in there. So let me fix that. Okay, this zero is wrong. Yes. Okay? All right. So what we're going to do is you're going to tell me what the missing digit is by voting with your clicker. I'm going to look it up online, and then my daughter gets to make fun of me at home. It's really a win for everybody. Thank you. put it 3:30. So, now 5 minutes. 3, 2, 1, stop.
Hold on, stop. Oh, crap.
Alright, you good? Alright, stop. Alright, so the preferred answer, not quite half the class, preferring C. I guess I can't tell from that if it's 2 or 7. So somebody who did C, was it 2 or 7?
7.
Alright, good. So here's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to go over to Google. And I made a promise that there was something that we could look up. So 9, 7, 8, 0, 5, 7, that's the missing digit, 0, 5, 6, 8, 6-1. Oh, it's not too embarrassing. So, so it's not going to be something. It's not going to be like porn or anything. I don't think she knows about that yet. Okay. Something broke down. So I got 7 as well, so I think that's the right answer, but I'm... So much for the punchline. Did anybody see that I did something wrong? I don't think I did. Oh! You know that Google did that? If you actually type in a barcode, it promises it will tell you what it stands for. Of course, it lies. But nevertheless, it tried. Right? I mean, this is Google's so cute, right? I mean, it said, hey, that looks like a barcode. I'd be happy to look that up for you as a barcode if you'd like, and not find it. But anyway, actually, the fact that Google recognized this as a barcode means that we got the right missing digit. So we can be happy about that. And Molly will have to tell me later where she intended. All right, we good? Any questions? So only half the class got the right answer. So possibly half of you have a question. And yet, no one's even going to ask it. Is that a question or just a...
Yes.
Oh, good. Hit me.
Can you do the... Because I know you did this live class. Can you show the... Like,
the
I
steps.
Right,
yeah. Do the steps. Do it again. Play it again, Sam. All right, sure. Kim, nice. Yeah, good. Yeah.
You're going to have two guys when you're doing odds?
Yes. If the X turns up in one of the odd positions, then you get something like, you know, like 34 plus X or whatever up here. When we multiply that by 3, then we're going to get a 3X in the bottom. Yeah. And those are the only things that can come up. It's not like some arbitrary weird combination with squares and polynomials dividing each other. It's just that it's as simple as that. Now, if we had a missing digit in the top and the bottom, we're screwed, right? There's not going to be enough information to nail down what they have to be. Yeah?
Is there some particular reason that they chose this particular math in order to produce the desired barcode?
I don't know. I can speculate. I mean, what I would guess is that the odds and evens, they want it so that if there was some kind of an error, usually on barcodes, what kind of errors are you going to see? Like somebody scratches the barcode or splatters it with blood. I don't know why that came to mind. So, cooking oil, right? Something. It's going to be localized to a contiguous set of digits. And you'd like it to be so that when you compute these checksums and so forth, you spread the digits back out. So they make the odds on one side and the evens on the other. They could have done left and right, but then that would have been subject to the possibility of getting two digits smashed from the same set. It would increase the probability. So they separate the odds and evens. Why the multiply by 3? Well, I don't know exactly about why the multiply by 3. They definitely want the odds and the evens to be considered separately. But that doesn't really tell you why 3. Why not 5 or 10? Well, if they had done 5, then you run into trouble that this, if you end up something like this, say I tell you it ends up with 73 plus 5x, and we want this to be a multiple of 10. Is there still just one answer? Is there no answer? There's no answer. Interesting, right? So in particular, we need this thing. We need an x so that when you plug in x to this, you get something that ends with a 7. But we all know that when you multiply by 5, it's going to end with what?
5 or 0.
Never 7. Only 5s and 0s. So that's why they didn't choose multiply by 5. That would have been really unhelpful. But 3 works. 9 would have worked. I want to say 7 would have worked. Anything that's relatively prime with respect to 10 should work. So not 2, not 5, and not 10. But that's not really like why 3... Why the patterns of bars the way they did? I don't know. They might have all been drinking. I don't know what they were doing.
Which digit did the check digit?
So interestingly, the last digit is the check digit.
This?
Yes. The final one. But when you do this calculation, it doesn't matter. They're all equal. All the odds are in one category, the evens in the other.
So then the last digit is the number that you get, you know, the odds plus the evens, or the odds times your plus the evens. Then from there to
yes.
So shouldn't x be 6 because the check digit is 1 up there?
Shouldn't x be 6?
Because you count from 1 to 3. You count from 1 to 3 and it kind of gets...
Hang on, you may be too many steps ahead of me. So you're saying, for example, we could get rid of the check digit. So let's just do that for a second.
You do include the check digit when you add them.
You include the check digit when you do this calculation.
So the total number you get is 123. You multiply the odds by 3, and add them to all the evens.
Uh-huh.
All the evens, you get 123. Right?
And uh-huh.
So the x that you're looking for is 123 plus x would make you 1 below the next multiple of 10.
Yes.
Is that correct or not?
I think so. So you're saying this should be a 6.
That's what I think.
Or you're saying the check digit should be a 6.
Well,
if the check digit was a 1.
If that's a 7, the check digit should be 0.
Let me just be concrete with you. I think you're thinking 2 steps ahead of me, and I'm just like getting lost. So you're saying if this were the... one thing we could check is, what would the check digit be if that were a 6?
Right.
And you're saying it should be 1.
That's what
it means. Even though at the moment it seems like it was something else.
Right.
So let's just check. We're just going to check it. So this still sums up to 34. This bottom, this is now x, right? So the bottom sums up to 13, 18, 26 plus x. Right? So we triple the top one. That should be the same as before. And we add 26, and we get, or 26 plus x. we get 8, 2, 1 plus x, so x should be 2. So that's a relief. Not that you did something wrong, but that like math continued to hold together for us. Waiting for that one day when somebody says, but shouldn't that be 11? And like it should, and then like all of math comes crashing down around us. But we, you know, we survived another day. All right. I think I'm not going to pay this one. Oh, yeah, we'll do this one. So, just to read it to you, since I got nothing else to do. Which of these words is not a portmanteau? Bit, spork, cyborg, sandwich, and brunch.
live questions online?
No, not yet. There's going to be a version of them on the website for people to answer if they weren't in lecture.
All right. Do you need points for answering them on the website? Is that the problem?
You got to do one or the other. That's the plan.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to wrap it up. Anybody need a couple more seconds? Great. Thanks. Five, four, three, two, not as consistent as I might have thought. All right, so what's going on with this one? So an image is really just like a grid of pixels. Each of those pixels takes 24 bits to write down, because there's one byte, one 8 bits for red, 8 bits for green, 8 bits for blue, one byte for each of those. The image itself has some height and some width. So for example, in this case, let's say that it's 9 by 6 instead of actually more like 900 by 600. All right. So how many pixels are in this image? Yeah. 54, right? There's 6 columns of 9 rows. So just multiply them again. I guess it's 54. Similarly, if this is 632 by 951, you could multiply them together and get something like 54, a little bit more, with more zeros after it. All right, so you could actually work that all the way through and get an exact number. Or you could just say, well, 900 is kind of like 1,000 and 632 is kind of like 600. So this is sort of like 600,000. So 600,000 individual dots. Each dot takes 24 bits to write down. So 24 bits times 600,000 dots gives you a total of, well, we worked that out. So it's, what did we say? It was 600,000 total pixels. And each one is 24 bits. So it's like 144 with 0000, which is 14, look, very close to 14,400,000, which was choice A. Okay, so just to see this guy's happy, smiling face, it's taking 14 million bits. Any questions on that? It was fewer than half of us got this. Yeah, got this right. But really all we did is we multiplied rows times columns to get the total number of pixels. Each pixel 24 bits, so we multiply by 24, and that gives us the total number of bits. Alright, so if it's helpful to think of it this way, you know, like one pixel is 24 bits, so I've got that in my hand, and you have to put one of those on top of each of the spaces in the image to represent the entire thing. Now, you can see the quality counts a little bit, right? Can you see that this guy is a little fuzzier? It's the same guy, right? But I downsampled a little bit, and I made it 79 by 105 pixels. He's still very recognizable as who he is, but you can see a little bit more jagginess around the edge. It's not quite as smooth, because there's fewer dots that are specifying the exact contour around his head. But this one, you know, this is like photo quality. That's the picture that they give out to newspapers and stuff like that, when this guy does something significant. All right, are you okay with that? Anyone get one of the other answers and not really sure why that wasn't right? Or should we press on? The multiplication. The question knowing which things to multiply. All right, now, last time I talked about ands and ors and nots. Here, let me just make this kind of easier. Okay. It's a quick one. And everybody looked at me like I was really speaking down to you, and I didn't mean to do that. In particular, I need to get you to, from that really simple explanation, to be able to solve little equations like this, or evaluate expressions like this. So, what is this? Is this true or false when you evaluate this whole thing out? it's looking like it's not so obvious anymore.
What is it asking?
It's asking that expression. Yeah. It's just, remember I said that Boolean algebra is like regular algebra. You've got things like numbers and things like operators. So if I gave you something that was like negative 3 times 7 plus 4 plus 9, you could work that out and say, here's what number that is. Well, these are Boolean expressions. So the answer, each thing evaluates to either true or false. So this whole expression, when you're done, is either going to be true or false. I'll work it on the board. See, for me, there's no jumps from what I said last time to this, but I know that there is. And I'm just trying to see if I can find where the jump is and get you over it. Sorry, I'm going to stop in 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Luckily, there's only two choices. So, don't choose C. That would be a mistake. Oh, good.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, man. Wow. All right, see, I told you this would happen, too. I need you to help me.
Help you.
Yeah. to understand how this works. So let's start off this way. Forget this for a second. I'm going to just translate this to something with numbers. Not translate it, but make something analogous with numbers. You know? Alright, so if I gave you an expression like this, okay, ignore the top one for a second, I just give you this. You can work out what this is, just do it for a second, let's see. Yeah, okay. Is that clear what that is? You need to say, yeah, some people still scribble. So this is mumble. I don't think it's negative 12, 0.
Zero.
Another -12. All right. So how do we get -12? The last -12. I didn't see your lips. Oh, there you are. Okay.
-6 times 4 is -24.
Why did you start here? Why not start with 4 plus 9?
Because of the parentheses.
All right, so you go to the innermost parenthesis. And this is a 6, a regular old 6, but it's negated, so it becomes -6. All right, so -6, and then you multiply it by 4, and you got -24. And the rest of it, we're going to carry down, right?
Yeah, not +3 is 12.
Now you have this other part of the parenthesis, and that's 12.
So that makes -4.
Right, so this is, really, you can think of it as 24 minus 12 negated. Right, if we're down at -24, we come back up 12, that's halfway back up towards 0. So the answer is -12. All right, now that wasn't one of the choices. So that can't be helpful. But we're going to do the same process, except for with the Boolean operations. All right, remember, the very, very first thing we did in the -6, da-da-da-da, was to find the innermost parentheses and simplify that part. So what's the innermost parentheses here?
Not true.
Not true. So what's not true?
False.
True. It becomes very hard to talk about this stuff. Alright, so this part here is really false. So really we've got false and false, or true or false. Alright, same thing. I'm doing the same steps that I did with the numbers, except now they're just weird symbols. Alright, what's the next thing we gotta do? We've got two sets of parentheses. We could do either of them. In fact, we'll do both of them. So what's the first one says false and false. Remember how and works. For the result of an and to be true, both the things that we're anding together have to be true. Any other case is false. So false and false is false.
Here.
All right, so this becomes false, or what's this part?
True.
True. False. New? False. Drop. I don't know what any of those words mean. So, or. How does or work? Or says, well, or is true if either of the things going into it are true. So true or false, right? I'm really happy to be here, or I have to run right now. It's true. Actually, yeah, for exactly the right reason, right? So, got false or true as all that's left. And again, as long as, or just says, are any of the things that are my inputs true? And it is. The second one is true. So the answer is true. So the answer is true. We're done. All right. And it is true that when you work these things out, it's very, very easy to just make one tiny mistake and get exactly the opposite answer, because there's only two possible answers. So, granted. But nevertheless, the process by which you sort of progress through this is this. Right? And so if you make a mistake, it probably happened somewhere along the way. You just need to keep track of it. Alright? Now, I took a shortcut on this one. I don't know. Did anybody see a faster way of solving this? You don't actually have to write anything down? Yeah.
This one's the second half.
Good.
But it's true. So, the whole thing is to ensure it's important.
Right? So, I actually didn't even bother with the... When I did this, I just didn't bother with the left-hand side. Because I knew it could either be true or it's false, but we're going to OR it with something that we know is true. We're done. It's going to be true. No matter which one this is, the answer is going to be true. It's sort of like multiplying by zero, right? If you're multiplying by zero, you've got some big complicated expression times zero. Hey, that's zero. How'd you know that? Because any can multiply by. It doesn't matter what the answer is. We know what the output's going to be. We know what the final output's going to be. So I took that kind of shortcut. There's a similar kind of shortcut that you can do on the other side. So here, let's try this. Let's try another one like this. So big complicated expression, but you can very quickly solve it. I can very quickly solve it?
Well, because the last part is false and true, so it has to be false. Then one of them is false, and then at the end of it.
Right. And so, right. So the first step is to notice, look, false and true. The only way an and can be true is if both sides are true. So this part is false. And now we've got some annoying expression that I made up on the fly and that I don't even know what the answer is, and false. Well, if this whole thing is true, it's true and false, the answer would be false. But if this whole thing is false, then you have false and false, and the answer would be false. So we don't give a hang anymore. What the top part is, we know that the final answer is false. Yeah?
So you have a whole thing like that, you look for
the
and pretty much.
No, because or had a trick too. If it was or true, then also we didn't have to evaluate this whole thing. Right? So, and I'm not saying here's how you should solve these problems, look for the shortcuts. I'm just saying sometimes you'll notice them and you can save yourself some time. It's also just to get you to think a little bit more. Alright, what about. So, what's that? Knots are kind of like negative signs in that they bind with the thing to their right. Right, so we had true, not true is false, not false is true, and not true is false. So, I couldn't fail to disagree with you less. It's one of those things where you just negate. It's like, how many negations did you do just that? All right, is this feel a little better now? This would have been easier after the explanation. So I don't think I want to do this right now, but another thing you can do is like with variables, right? So we say x, let's say x is true and y is false. What is this expression? Well, you just plug in the x and y, which are false, and you work it through. Is this one that does a nice shortcut? Yes. So what is this one?
True.
True, right. Why? Because here we have x and y, in other words, true and false. This is false. Not false is true. True or I don't give a hang is true. What? We good? Alright. Yes. I'm interested to see how this one goes. So we also talked about these little electric circuits where switches can be on or off. On is true and off is false. And lights can be on or off. So now the question is, what Boolean algebra expression is this circuit representing? So we've got the value of the light depends on the value of the switches, but how? The light will be on X and Y, Y and Z or X or Y, Y and Z and X or Y. And each of those corresponds to a circuit, which is interesting. You can go back and forth between these representations, but I want to know what this one is. So that's great. This is the more important stuff anyway. So I'm glad that this is easy. Anybody? It wasn't 100%. So if
any of the 6% that are left have a question about this, let me know. But that was a great explanation. So that's exactly what's going on. When is the light bulb going to go on?
Well, if X is down by itself, that's fine. Or the other possibility is that both Y and Z have to be down. Right? So you really do get what ands and ors are. That's exactly how they work.
It makes me very happy to hear that. Alright, I think we're done with that. So, I will commence with some more extra stuff. Oh, good. Alright, very good. Any other questions or comments before we dive into the faculty lecture? We good? I did get some email from people asking, you know, where's the updated lecture for today? So I did eventually get that out. I think I mailed it to everybody. I will try to give you more lead time in the future. I always try. I'll try a little harder. All right, so we're going to play a game. This is a simplification of a game called MIM. So I'm calling it Mini MIM. Does anybody know why Mini MIM is a name that tickles me? I like the name very much. Good. Yes, it's one of those things that you didn't know the name of. Palindrome. Right. It's the same forward and backward. Mini MIM. Oh, all right. You know, like Bob. Race car. That's better. All right, so here's how we play this game. We've got a pile of objects. In this case, they're the letter R. Just an R that I happen to find on the web. And we're going to take turns. And on each player's turn, your move is you can choose to take one of the R's away or two of the R's away. It doesn't matter which ones there are, because all that matters is whoever takes the last object wins. Okay? And so, you know, because I'm a magnanimous kind of person, I will let you go first. Let's see, how many? We have 10 R's to start? So, good. All right. How many would you like to take? We could do it as a clicker thing and we could vote. Or I could just stand here in silence. That only works. One or two objects. What do you think? Feeling lucky, punk? Go ahead. What? Two? All right, good. All right, so we'll take two away. All right, now it's my turn. going up as the ones are saying the twos are idiots and the twos are saying ones are idiots. The ones are being really bold. I'm going to do one. And now it's my turn. I'm going to do two. Say what?
Whoever goes first when there are 10 things automatically wins.
Okay, hang on. Hold that thought for 1 second. So, if I'm feeling you out correctly, what just happened is you were thinking, and then we got down to three, and you gave up, and you bowed to my superior will. All right? And why is that? But let's be explicit about what just happened. So with three left, you can choose one. I'll make you choose one, because I have the keyboard. And I say, aha, there's one or two left. Being that I'm not a complete idiot, I will choose two, winning the game. All right? So, blah. All right. So then the claim is, oh, come on. You knew how this was going to go. You made it be 10. You made us go first, because whoever goes first with 10 wins. I'll go first. I take one. Oh, wait. That was funny, but that was not actually on purpose. What happened here? This sort of PowerPoint-like program doesn't like going backward on an animation. So we'll just go forward. Right. So again, I'm going to take one. There were 10 objects. I took one. Your turn. You're the one who made me go first. Do you have a thought? Yeah.
Okay.
Mostly I've been hearing once, but I'll...
Yeah, as long as I don't make a mistake, you can't win. But if I make a mistake, you will. You know what I mean?
So I'm going to say don't make a mistake. Go with one? All right. So you go with one, and I'm going to think and say two. I'm going to take away two.
No, we take two.
You take two. Very good.
No!
Then I take one, and wait, doesn't this seem familiar? You're back! Alright. Oh, did you notice, by the way, since I like this sort of thing? Did you see what happened to the button at the end?
Yeah.
It turned around and said win. Alright. Alright, so. Who would you like to go first?
You should go first.
You wanted to go first again? No, he doesn't really know yet. We're gonna get to the point where you can actually beat this game every single time, but I don't think we're there yet. So, whoever goes first with the 10 has a guaranteed winning strategy. So I will let you go first again. So the thing that you didn't know is the very first time we played, I knew that whoever went first could win, but I knew what it would take to win, and since everyone was yelling out the two different answers, I could choose which one to pretend to hear. So I was going to win that first game no matter what, but not because there was 10 objects, because I had access to the keyboard. Anyway, so you can win with 10. What do you need to do? Well, does anybody know yet? So let's not do 10. Let's use this idea of reduction. Remember I said that computer science is a lot about reduction. It's about knowing an answer to a simple thing, and then using that simple answer to solve a more complicated thing. So what happens if there are three R's left? All right, if I can make you have three R's left, or let's play it from your side, you're trying to beat me. If you can make me have three R's left, I'm dead, right? Because if I take two, you take one. If I take one, you take two. Either way, you win. So you want to get me to have three. How can you use that fact to get a strategy when there's some larger number? What else can you give me that you can force a win?
Six.
Why six? I hear multiple of three. That's smart.
Because if you take two, then there's four left. We can take one. If you take one, there's five left. We can take two.
And leaving me with three. Right, so now that you know that you want to leave me with three, if there are six left, you can leave me with three. In other words, you'd like to leave me with six left. So taking this thinking one more step, what else would you like to leave me with?
Nine.
Very good. So last year I did the same game, and people were saying prime numbers, even numbers, odd numbers. No. What is it? It's multiples of three. Right? Why? Because when there's two and one choice, if I choose one, you can choose two. If I choose two, you can choose one. You can always make it add up to three. So if you get me to have three, that's good. Six is good. Nine is good. 12 is good. 15 is good. You know, we run out of screen at some point. So, 10 objects, you go first.
One.
Beautiful. All right. Ah, but
Since that worked for you, I'm going to choose two.
One.
Okay, let's see. Oh, wait, you took two by accident. Very good. So you beat me. You won. Nicely done. All right. So, cute little game, and, you know, feel free to play it. Right? If the rules, you can change the rules in various ways, but that same kind of reasoning where you solve it for the small pile, figure out where the forced wins are, and then grow out, figure out what the multiple needs to be to keep it in a winning position, any of these versions you can do. It ends up being very, very simple. This is the simplest of all. All right. So, that being said, what we're going to do, and so in the book, those of you who have gotten the book before they ran out in the bookstore, Hillis says that when he was a kid, he was probably a very weird kid. He was a weird adult. He is a weird adult. He built a tic-tac-toe playing program out of wood, nails, wire, a battery, and switches, and a light, and some light bulbs. And he doesn't really say exactly what he means by that. He just says, yeah, well, you know, you can make ands and ors out of switches. Well, so tic-tac-toe is a little bit too complicated, but this game, NIM, is actually simple enough that we could make a very simple NIM program out of wires and wood, well, at least simulations of them. I'm not very good with wood, actual wood. So here's what we need to do. We need to figure out what the game tree looks like for this game. So what does that mean? So if let's start out, we're going to try to program the computer to beat people. And let's say that people get to go first, and there's five. All right. So if there's five objects, and people now have a choice. The person could choose one, or the person could choose two. If the person chooses one, then I know the contrast is not good. Can you actually read this? It says three left, yellow on white, or white on yellow. Brilliant. Or a person could take two, and then there'd be two left. So now it's our turn. If there's two left, did I do this right? No, sorry. There's five left, and the person takes one, that would mean there's four left. But now it's the computer's turn. How many should the computer choose at that point? The computer should take away one, leaving three. All right, so the computer's optimal strategy is already built into this tree. If a person starts up and takes two, that leaves us, the computer. That leaves the computer with three, which is not a winning move for us. We could choose one or two. We don't know which to choose, because the other player can beat us either way. Let's just choose one to keep the game going as long as possible. That leaves the person with two. If there's three, now we branch from there. Three left, the person can either choose one or two. If the person chooses one, we win. The computer wins. See? If the person chooses two, we choose one and the computer wins. Okay? So on these branches of the tree, computer wins. If there's two left and it's the person's turn and the person very helpfully chooses one, then the computer takes the last object and wins. But if the person is not an idiot, the person will take two and then the user wins. Okay? So this is a strategy for just the five object NIM that will result in a win for the computer unless the person plays perfectly, which is the situation you were talking about before. You can, just because you're losing doesn't mean that you'll lose. It means the other player has to play perfectly to keep you from winning. All right, so is this clear enough? Again, apart from the contrast issue. Do you get the tree? Any questions about that? So this has a strategy built into it. All right, so. Right, so we talked about that already. So here's the logic of the game. We write it out this way. There's always five left in the beginning. So we'll say five left is always true. Then either three is going to be left or two is going to be left, depending on what the person chooses. So there's a switch that the person can pull, which is either take one object or take two objects on the first turn. If the person takes one object on the first turn, then there's going to be three left. If the person takes two objects on the first turn, then there's going to be two left. Otherwise, not. Okay? So now we're building up these logical expressions. So now, when does the computer win? The computer wins if there's three left, and the person either takes one or two, either way, or there's two left and the person takes away one, right? That's the condition under which we got to a branch in that tree where computer wins. Otherwise, the user wins if there's two left and the user takes two on the second move. Yes?
Isn't it redundant to say three left and take one or take two?
Yes, right. So take one, it is and it isn't. So person has to either take one or two by the rules of the game. So this or that has to be true. Right? Because it's either true or false or true, both of those evaluate to true. So I could have just gotten rid of that entirely. However, the computer doesn't actually win until the person makes the move. So what this is really saying is wait until someone's chosen one or the other of those two choices. You'll see in the circuit that that actually matters. Yeah.
I just have a question. Why do you have like the little twos and little ones?
Right. So I use this, the two subscript to mean the person's choice on the second round. So the person gets to play two rounds. The little one means their choice in the first round. Little two means their choice in the second round. Little notation I use. Okay. That elbow or a question?
Elbow.
Great. Nice elbow. Very, very nice. All right. Good. All right. So we can go now, so just like you did just a couple minutes ago, we can go from this logical description to a circuit. And in fact, this is what the circuit looks like. We've got the battery going here. We said that there's always five left. We always start off saying, hey, there's five left. It's the user's turn. So that light bulb is just connected directly to the battery. That's easy. Another light bulb, the two left light bulb goes on if and only if the take two sub one switch. The person on the first move chooses two, so we just wire that to the switch. So that switch goes down, this light bulb goes on. But then there's more complicated ones at the end, like, oh, let's take the user one. When did the user win? We said the user won only when the user did take two on the first move and take two on the second move. And so you can see we've got an and. The switches are wired in. That could be one. The other one could be series. So which one? So we've got this switch, follow the wire. This switch, and then it goes up. That's a little bridge thing. Sorry, I did that last time too. It goes underneath the bridge and comes up, goes through that double throw switch. And only if both of those switches are down do we get that light bulb. So they're in series, one after the other. And that's an and. Okay? So this, you know, the details of this aren't so important, but basically what I did is I translated the logic into a circuit. Okay? We okay with that? Let's say we're okay with that. All right. So then, I did this a couple years ago, and just like last night, I said, hey, wait, we can turn this into something that's actually alive. So let's see if I can do that. Using the scratch program I wrote the other day. Ha. Huh. Oh, no, there it is. So here's that same circuit again. But this time,
it is.
All right, so this time, so now we can actually, so this light bulb is on, we can actually play the game. So let's say we choose one on the first move. Let's see what happens. We flip that switch down. Hold on, none. All right, hang on a second. Let's put that switch up and tell the thing that we're actually here and want to play this game. Hang on a second. All right, good, settle down. So this is where we should start. All right, so now we're playing a computer. We get to choose on our first move either to take one by flipping this switch or to take two by flipping this switch. Let's say that we're not very good at this game. We choose to take one, and let's watch what happens. Electricity spreads. Bing. Now there's three left. Okay, the light bulb went on. And now I can choose to either take two or take one on the second move. So let's say I choose to take two. Computer one. How does it do it? I don't know. All right. Actually, I do know because I can just trace what happened to the electricity. So how did this light bulb get lit up? Well, it traveled through the take one switch and then the take two switch and then it went to the light bulb. It's that simple. All right. Well, then I say, okay, well, that was dumb. I shouldn't have done that. Let's turn that off and let's take one on the second move. Let's see what happens now. Oh, it won again. How did it do it this time? That much smarter than me. So I took one, the electricity spread, and now it's going through this bottom switch to get to the light bulb. There's two different paths, that's the OR, right? There's two different ways of getting to that light bulb. So there's two different ways that the computer can win. How do we get the user to win? Well, I'll leave that as an exercise for you later. It should be easy to figure out, though. But this circuit is really, it's actually tracing out the logic for us, which is very nice. We can actually see light bulb going on and off as we play with it. Okay. It lets you test this out. It also lets us do really crazy things like, I don't want to choose. I would like to take one and take two in the first round. Well, of course, now we have some nonsense. So now, if you notice, there's three left and there's two left. So we're in some kind of weird quantum state where, you know, black is white, up is down, cats are dogs.
3 is 2. Alright. So since this is available on a web page, and it's just, I'd like you to play with it. So one of the questions on the homework when it goes out will be to actually just go to that web page, and it's right there. You can just start clicking switches, and lights should light up. It should just work. And then I'll get mail saying, yeah, it should, but it didn't. But then at least it's available. Alright, so this is pretty cool, but this is just for the 5 version. Imagine we're trying to do the 10 version, the version that we're playing together with the R's on the bottom. I went and tried to build the circuit for that, because that would be cool, but I couldn't do it. And I went and I thought about, why can't I do this? Why can't I make this work? The logic is still pretty clear. I know that I want to get, the computer always wants to get the other person down to a multiple of 3. It seems very simple. But the problem is that some of the switches are used in multiple places. Like when I choose to take 2 away, or the user takes 2 away on the 3rd round, that has implications down the line, and so that information has to be sort of stored in some way. And since the output of these switches is used in multiple places, I needed like a switch when you put it down, like 5 wires come together, and it was getting really hairy. It was very hard to keep track of all the different circuits. So it got too complicated for me. I certainly couldn't draw it on the screen. I gave up. But here's the thing. All right, so we talked about bits, zeros and ones. And in the circuit, zeros and ones are represented with electricity. So a wire is on if there's electricity going through it. It's purple in the pictures. A switch is on if it's down. A light is true if it's lit. And so for the inputs and outputs, it's actually quite clear. This information is traveling around. If you want something to be true, you have to throw the switch down. If you want to see if something is true, you have to see if the light goes on. But in the middle, you really want to use like logic gates. You really want ands and ors and stuff and nots in the middle, because that's an easier way of describing it than some complicated combination of internal switches. Right? We'd like the circuit itself to be able to make things true and false, and that's not how these circuits are set up. So I also drew on the screen here what and or and not look like in this kind of circuit terminology, right? So what is not? Not is something that if electricity isn't coming in, it will come out the other side. But if electricity is coming in, it goes out the other side. Which of these two cases do you think is easier to build a circuit for? To build a not gate, it has to do both. But one of those is much easier to achieve than the other. Right? If you want to, yeah, go ahead. The second one, right, where electricity comes in and nothing comes out, right? You can do that just by, say, a pair of scissors, right? So that's really, what's hard is making something that whenever there's no electricity coming into it, electricity will come out the other side. It's hard to imagine in terms of the components that we've got, but we're going to invent a new kind of component to deal with that. Is that a question? No? Good. The ands and ors, we don't want them to be switches anymore. We want something where two electrified lines come in, or two lines come in and one line goes out, and if both of them have electricity coming in, then it should have electricity going out, and otherwise not. And it's not really clear how to build that either. Right? It's not so bad if the two lines come from switches. You put two switches down, and you can make it into an AND. But this is now electrified wires. It's not clear how to do that. The OR is actually much easier to do. How would you do that? So if you've got two lines coming in, if either of them has electricity flowing on it, then we have a wire coming out the other side that has electricity flowing through it. How can you do that?
Just
connect them, right? It's just, if two wires come in and touch the outgoing wire will have current on it if either of the other ones have current on it. It'll just flow right through. And it's a little trickier. You need to have both for the output to work. So you almost need like a reluctant wire, right? It just sort of sits there, and if it gets nudged once, it doesn't do anything. But if it gets nudged twice, like, okay, then let's switch the speaker. And using the parts that we have at the moment, you can't, it's not clear how to do that. All right, so here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna make a new kind of switch, right? So the switches, the way we were building ands and ors before is by putting down switches either in parallel or in series. We need a new kind of switch that can switch itself, right? We want the computer to do all the work. We want to build electronics that if decisions are being made and trues and falses are happening, that it can change its own outputs without me having to go in and flip switches. So we're going to make a switching component, right? An electricity-activated switch. A switcher, if you will. And here's how it's going to work.
All right? So here it is up here. Let's make it a picture. Not so much. But it comes to light. All right, never mind. So in that box there is a new kind of component that we can put in our circuits. And here's how it works. It's got two inputs and sort of two outputs, but one of them just goes right to ground, just goes back to the battery. The other side is a wire that can come out, and you can connect it to a light bulb or other circuits or whatever you want to do. And the way that it works is inside of it there's a switch. In the bottom of the square, there's a wire going through with a little switch thing in it. But this isn't a switch for people to activate. It's a switch for that little wavy line thing to activate. And the way that it works is this. If there's electricity on the top line, it opens up the switch. It turns it off. If there's no electricity on the top line, then the switch is closed. So the top line of electricity turns the switch on and off. Now, electricity will either flow through that or not, through the bottom line or not. But the top one controls whether or not that switch is open or closed. And in this case, I have it kind of reversed. That if there's power on the top one, that makes the lower switch off. And if there's no power on the top one, that makes it on. So the way I was picturing it is almost like it generates magnetic current that lifts the switch up. And if you turn off the top wire, then it lets go and the switch closes back down again. So it's electric current and a spring, maybe. I don't really know how this works. Was that a question? No? Good. All right. So here's that component. We'll call it a relay, because that's what it's called. And let me connect it up into a little circuit that looks like this. I have got my battery. Right off of the battery, I put electricity down into the bottom line of the relay. And the second one, I put through a switch first, and then put it through the top line of the relay. And then the output of the relay, I put through a light. And let's watch what happens now. So if you open up the top switch, you know, make it false. If the A switch is false, then the activation part of the relay is off, so the switch is closed, it's in the on position. So our electricity is just going to flow straight through and right to the light bulb. But if we close that top switch, if we put power through the top switch, now that activates the relay, which opens up the switch, turns it off, and now the light bulb goes off. So what have we got here? We've got something that when A is false, the light is true. And when A is true, the light is false. So this is like a logic gate. What logic gate is this?
Not.
Yeah, it is. So this gives us a way, this special kind of component gives us a way of actually wiring things together so we can make electricity when there's none and make none when there is. Yes? Right.
But we still have to flip A.
Right, but it turns out that input line could actually come from another relay. It doesn't have to come from a switch. So we can actually start wiring relays to other relays, and they can all be turning themselves on and off. So I'll show you a concrete example of that. Next slide. Yes. All right, so here's an example. We've got two relays. This example has been known to lose people, though I had three relays in it before. It's somewhat simpler now. But let's look at what we've got here. This first relay, the output of that relay is actually wired to the control part of the second relay. So the first relay is deciding whether the second relay is going to have its switch open or closed. The switch, the A switch, is controlling the first relay. So the A switch controls the first relay, the first relay controls the second relay, and this B switch is controlling the second line into there. All right, but so what is this actually doing? So we need to trace it out.
I think I built one of these in Scratch. Let me see what this looks like.
So this is just the one relay example. Just to ground this out a little bit more. So here we've got, again, the bottom wire of the relay is put through, is put directly through for the power, and the top one is through a switch. So at first the switch is off, so the relay is actually in the on position. So if we close it, that does nothing. Actually trying again. All right, so if we close it, power flows through the top one, that makes it all happy, which opens the switch, which in this case cuts off the light. But again, we could have put the output of that relay through to other relays, to other switches, to other lights, in other circuits, whatever. But that output now represents a Boolean value to a true or false, either on or off. And we can do lots of different things with it at that point. Turn the switch off, relay goes into the on position, and light goes on. I don't think I did the two relay example, but we can do it. We'll do it by hand. Alright, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to step through what happens to this relay circuit for each combination of the values of the switches. Now the switches, all the switches are doing are controlling whether the bottom input of the bottom relay has power and whether the top input of the top relay has power. So initially, let's make them both false. So what happens in this case? Well, the power still goes through the second wire. This relay is in the on position because there's no electricity on the top wire. So that flows all the way through, which turns this relay into the off position, which does nothing, as it turns out, and the light bulb is off. Okay? So if the two switches are false, the light bulb is false. What if the second switch is now true? Well, that didn't change anything because the second switch, the power on the second switch went through the bottom of the relay, which was in the off position anyway, so it still doesn't make it to the light bulb. So if A is false and B is true, the output is still false. Let's switch it around now. What if A is true and B is false? Well, again, this isn't going to do anything because if this, the only way that the light bulb can get power is if it goes both through this switch and that one. This one's closed now, as it turns out, but this one's still in the off position, so the electricity doesn't make it there, the light bulb's off. But what if we do both A and B on? So now they're both true. Because the first one has now power entering the top of the relay, that switches it off. Because that's off, it turns the second relay on, so the power is able to flow straight through, and it goes to the light bulb. So to summarize, for this example, here's we're going to put everything in a table. So when A, the first line is the first slide I showed you. A was false and B was false, the light bulb was false. A was false, B was true, the light bulb was false. A was true, B is false, the light bulb was false. In the last case, when A was true and B was true, the light bulb went on, it was true. So this circuit, it sort of doesn't matter where the A power and the B power come from or where the C power is going to go, they obey this relationship in this table. Yeah?
I'm glad you have the same thing, but I think you added on another...
Yeah, that was the example that I used in class last time that seemed to make people's heads explode. So I wanted to simplify it a little bit. And I think this is on the web now, but you're right. If you downloaded before, you know, whatever, 9 p.m. last night, you got a different
version. I think it's the same concept.
It's just examples with these relays, how the relays can be attached to one another to calculate things. But in this case, what is the logical function that this circuit of relays actually does? Two hands so far. Any more hands? Come on. Another one. There's a subset of people who are more willing to put their hands up. And I appreciate that. But I want to hear from some other people too. Yeah.
It's an AND.
Right? We didn't know how to do an AND a minute ago, but it's actually doing an AND. It requires both of two inputs to be powered on for the output to be powered on. Now we can make an AND. We can make a NOT. We can make an AND. And by just connecting wires directly together, we can make an OR. We've got a whole lot of fun logic that we can make now. So this is an AND. All right? Any thoughts or questions on that from the non-hand up people? All right. The thing I showed you a couple slides ago was a NOT gate. And the way so sometimes you can draw it with the relays, like I did, but sometimes it's easier to just draw a little box and say, in here lies a NOT gate. So whatever the input is, the output's always going to be the opposite. And then the real electronics people, not me, will sometimes draw it, they call this an inverter, and they'll draw it this way, a triangle with a little dot. So the signal travels down this way, and it's always flipped in value. The little circle thing is what they use to mean flip. So we'll see that sometimes. All right. Now that we can wire a couple relays together and make an AND gate, it sort of doesn't matter anymore what's going on inside the AND gate. So now we can use this as a reduction trick. We can say, you know what, whenever we need an AND gate in a circuit, it can be made to happen. We showed that we could do it once, we could do it anytime we wanted. Same thing with NOT gates. So we can actually make a circuit like this. It takes A and B in, puts A through a NOT gate, puts B through a NOT gate,
puts the output of both of those through an AND gate, and then whatever comes out of that puts through one last NOT gate before it spits things out. What is this going to do? Did I say it on the... No, okay. What is this going to do? Right? So we can write it as an equation. It takes whatever A is and negates it. It takes whatever B is and negates it. It takes the result of both of these and ands it. Then it takes the result of that and negates it. Morgan's Law. Sorry. This might look familiar to you. It might not. It probably is. Apparently it's not. De Morgan's Law said that not A and not B is really the same thing as not A or B. Right? So if we not both sides of the equation, not A and not B is really or. So this is just a complicated way of saying or. And in fact, we can start gluing ands and ors and nots together in any way we want and start making more and more complicated expressions. And now we don't have to care about switches and relays and stuff anymore because they're all inside those boxes where we don't have to care about them. That's kind of the upside of reduction. Yeah, we could step through all these cases, but this is just more exhaustive. Yeah, I hear your restlessness. Let me try to get to a breaking point. I think I'm a slide or so away. With these ideas, you can actually... This is sort of simpler for NIM5, but NIM10 now becomes possible. You can actually draw out the NIM10. It's still a pain, but at least it's possible. With the switches, with the actual physical switches, it wasn't really possible. With relays, and then the gates that you can build out of them, you're good to go. So what I'm going to... Let's see. Oh, I still have 4 minutes. I'm going to show you a video. So if you just stay just another minute, I'm going to show you a video. So I explained how you can think about these switches. If you've got relays and wires and batteries and light bulbs, you can build various kinds of logic gates. But there's lots of other ways that people do it. In fact, in a computer, it's done with silicon and transistors. These relays are actually made out of little quantum devices called transistors, which are pretty slick. But people have talked about making logic gates out of neurons, like brain cells, quantum material, light, DNA. I went to a talk where someone was taking, he was doing logical operations by pouring DNA into beakers and then mixing them with each other and shaking them, and then it would give you the answer. There's lots of things. In the book, it talks about Tinkertoys and hydraulic valves. Here's what I did. This short video is intended to show how everyday objects can be used to make logic gates. First, dominoes. Here we use 2 rows of dominoes to represent a bit. When the bottom row is toppling, that represents a 1, and when the top row is toppling, it represents a 0. This is the schematic for a NOT gate or an inverter. When a 0 enters the gate, a 1 exits. When a 1 enters the gate, a 0 exits. This construction lets a single piece of information propagate to multiple places. An OR gate takes 2 bits of information and outputs 1. If both input bits are 0, then the output is 0 as well. If either or both of the inputs is 1, however, the output is 1. Here we see the input 0, 1, producing an output of 1. An input of 1, 0, outputting 1. And an input of 1, 1, also outputting a 1. Researchers at IBM have experimented with molecular-scale atomic dominoes. What we see here is a series of these atoms actually set up to propagate information from one place on the chip to another. When one of the molecules is moved, it sets off a cascading chain reaction that eventually flows to an output. Depending on where the input starts, different outputs are possible. The second demonstration is with marbles. Here, instead of 2 rows of dominoes, we use 2 tracks and a rolling marble to represent the bit. This is an inverter. A 1 bit turns into a 0, and a 0 turns into a 1. This is a splitter, taking one piece of information and propagating it in different directions. This is an OR gate,
0, 0 causes an output of 0. 0 and 1 results in an output of 1. An input of 1 and 0 again results in an output of 1. And finally, input of 1, 1 ends up with an output of 1 as well.
All right.
Probably not.
count five. So I need to
I forgot to turn this off.